Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Directions for Truth show with Richard Talk to Me Guy. And Sherry is scurrying around like crazy, working on the class that's happening all week. So I'll be doing the show solo. And if you're here looking for the WebEx feed, there is no WebEx feed. So it's an audio only. The show will be available for replay. We've got a new tab that I'm very happy about at Sound Health Options under the radio tab.
You can
go there to Sound Health Options, click on the radio tab, and then click on radio archives for all the shows. And this show will appear there about 10 to 15 minutes after I end the show. And you can also go out into the world, into the podcasting world of iTunes or Pocket Casts or your aggregator of choice, and search for Sherry Edwards and find any number of the almost tipping over to 500 shows. So that's very exciting. If you have any questions, feel free to go to chat at blogtalkradio.com/Sherry Edwards, and you'll find this most current show at the top of that list. Today's guest will be Ronald Mann, author of Sacred Healing, Integrating Spirituality with Psychotherapy. Wow, when worlds collide. I do have one brief announcement, only because it humors me so, that in Trump land, the Donald has chosen Rudy Giuliani. Now, he's unofficial, so that puts him over in that space. But Rudy Giuliani is a cybersecurity advisor. And the most amusing part about this is, A, who knew he'd do anything about security? And evidently, based on his site, since his site was shredded by hackers shortly after the announcement, revealing that much of the code that the site was based on was over 4 years old and his security keys were not up to date, and everything about the site was unsecure and a mess, and it's been down since. And yet, Trump feels that this is a good security advisor. Really? I'll put that in the show notes. I find that just like, really? It's all amazing. Yeah, there's so many things I could say, but I will not. I will introduce today's great guest. Dr. Ronald Mann has been helping people awaken their consciousness for over 40 years. His presence and depth of intuitive insight, along with his psychological training, give him a unique expertise in the field of spiritual development. Dr. Mann obtained a master's degree in educational psychology from the University of California, Santa Barbara, a doctor of philosophy from the California School of Professional Psychology, Los Angeles, and he obtained postgraduate training in executive coaching and organization development from the William James Institute of the Professional School of Psychology. He practiced as a licensed psychologist from 1976 to 2002. Ron joins us in discussing his latest book, Sacred Healing, Integrating Spirituality with Psychotherapy.
Ron, what was your path in psychotherapy to the discovery of the power of spirit and its relationship to healing?
Did you ask when was it?
Well, or either what was your path or, when is great.
It started, interestingly enough, a couple years after I was out of graduate school. I had my PhD, and I was working in Beverly Hills. I had a private practice, and I went straight through school. I was 26 when I graduated from California School of Professional Psychology. Had my PhD, did my postdoctoral hours, had a license, And I remember one day walking down Camden Drive in Beverly Hills thinking, this is a joke. I'm 26 years old. I have a great education. I have spent my whole life in school. I have no life experience. And people are counting on me to help them with their lives. I said, well, now that I have the time and the money, I need to get involved in life and just kind of fill out my own development because I've been sheltered just being in school all this time. So I found myself asking myself, what scares you the most? And immediately the answer was death. Because of my early childhood, my parents were freaked out about death and dying, and they sheltered me, and they really made me afraid to even go to funerals. And it was not the kind of a comforting experience for that. So I thought, okay, let's deal with that. I was trained with a specialty in child and family psychotherapy. So I thought, well, as long as I have that skill set, let's start working with kids who are terminally ill. So I put out the word to my friends who I knew were working in that world. And within a couple of weeks, I got a referral for a little boy, 3 years old, who had an astrocytoma tumor, which is generally an old person's kind of tumor, and its prognosis is not good. So I have the little boy now, and I'm thinking, well, I really need to find out what I'm doing here. So in those days, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was pretty active teaching, and she happened to be giving a lecture at a large holistic health conference down in San Diego. So I signed up, I went down there, and at this point in my life, I'm pretty straight. I mean, I had a PhD, and I was brought up in the Jewish tradition, so I had some religious background, but I wouldn't say that I was highly spiritual, and I certainly had very little direct experience of God, spirit, and its various manifestations. So I'm sitting in this room listening to her. All of a sudden, I see this beautiful array of blue light around her shoulders and her head. It's like a volcanic eruption that is totally timed to the intensity of her emotion. So as she's getting more into what she's saying, it's, you know, expanding and kind of exploding more, and then it comes down. So I was kind of transfixed watching the light show while she was speaking. And when she was done, I thought, I need to meet this woman. Now, I'm in a room with a few thousand people. I'm sitting in the back, and it's a rectangular shaped kind of landscape kind of room. I'm in the back, and I looked up, and she's gone. And I go, where in the world did she go? So I noticed on the right side of the room, there were these two steel doors, like French doors, but in their interior doors. So I just got up and I walked through the doors. And as soon as I opened the door, she was standing right there. And I just put my hand out and she held my hand. She had so much love that I felt like I was melting into her by holding her hand. And we talked a little bit. And I told her that I wanted to get to know her better and learn more. And she told me about these programs that she ran called Death and Dying. They were week-long seminars, and she had one, I think, in 6 months coming up in Maui. And I thought, well, that's a good place to go. Well, I'm going to go on a retreat. Let's go to Maui. So I signed up, and I waited. I went. And during the course of that week, I had a spontaneous mystical awakening where my chakras started opening. I became clairvoyant. I could see energy. I could feel it going up my spine. My heart opened. I had a past life memory of being with Jesus, which opened up a whole new inner world for me because I was not brought up in that tradition. I had now a depth of wisdom that I never had before. And this went on for the 5 days. I mean, it's a whole long story. It's in my book, Sacred Healing, Integrating Spirituality with Psychotherapy. I tell the story as the energy is moving up my spine. And every day there was a major awakening where I felt more falling into a universal love that I had read about, but never had a clue what people were talking about because I never had the experience. So now I'm seeing things on the inside. I see how we're all interconnected. And my consciousness is changing. My vibration is changing. and I'm moving up into higher frequencies in my body and in my awareness. And so I came back at the end of the week. And I guess one thing to know, which I think is a helpful thing for our listeners, is that when this started, I was a little afraid. I thought, man, maybe I've just flipped out. Maybe I'm having a psychotic break, given my traditional training, right? And because of my training, I was able to observe what was happening. And I realized that there's this thing we call the observing ego. Consciousness was there, and I was very aware of what was going on. I wasn't lost in it. If you're really in a psychotic place, that observing ego is gone, and you're just busy being whatever. You know, it's like you think you're Jesus, as opposed to thinking the Christ energy has entered me, and it's flowing through me, and I feel connected with him. Very different ways to experience this thing. So I realized that I wasn't nuts, that I was having some kind of spiritual experience. I had read a lot of Carlos Castaneda, and I knew there was a spiritual reality. And I thought, well, I've got 5 days here, and at the end of the time, I have to go back to work. And so I made a decision that I wouldn't resist anything, because I realized that the only way to get through this was to surrender to it and just go with whatever happened, no matter how weird or scary it seemed to be. And some of the things were pretty scary. I have past life memories, and some of them were pretty disturbing. And I had experiences with the dark side as well as the light. I was kind of seeing the whole picture and going through it. And because I just kept going with every experience, I came out reasonably intact and was able to come home. These experiences went on for like 4 years. I had a lot of internal teachings. I got to the point where I would just, after I would spend the day in the office, I'd go home at night, sit on my bed, close my eyes, and these inner beings would show up and we would have conversations, and I would ask questions and they would teach me things. I didn't read anything. So I was kind of functionally illiterate as it relates to spiritual information, but I was having direct experience of all this stuff. So
wow.
When I first came back to my practice, I remember the first client on the first day I'm back was this young 20-something-year-old girl. Of course, you have to remember, at this point, I'm like 27, 28, so, you know, we're both young. She's talking, and I'm looking at her. All of a sudden, I can't see her body. All I see is a luminescent golden egg shape of light sitting on my couch, and I hear the voice. And I was working very hard to try and get back to where I could see her body, because I thought that the state I was in was kind of interesting to me, but I'm not sure how helpful it was to her. So my practice began to change, that the people who originally came to me because they were looking for a very traditional psychotherapist either left or I referred them out. And the new people came because of magnetism, you know, like attracts like. People were coming who were more interested in consciousness. And my work shifted. Even when I came back, prior to going to Hawaii, I was in a analytic training to become a Kleinian analyst, because that was kind of the stepping stone of my professional progression. But I saw something in Hawaii that affected me pretty profoundly, because I now realize that we have a soul. We're not just the mind, and we're not just the emotions, and not just the body. The soul is very real and important. And this whole traditional analytic world didn't believe in it. They didn't relate to it. They didn't know what to do with it. And I thought, well, they're really missing something. So I came back, and my first session, I quit. And I explained everything that went on and said, you know, I just don't want to be like you. I think this other path means more, and it's closer to some deeper reality. And so I then started looking for yogis and healers, as opposed to psychologists to hang out with. I didn't hang out with too many psychologists, but I started looking for people who had the gift to heal, who had the ability to see things in a subtle way, who had the ability to work with consciousness in the body. I trained with various people, over the course of years who helped me realize what my own capacity was. And so that also led me to the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda and Kriya Yoga. I had been meditating, doing mostly mindful meditation and some Yogi Bhajan kind of Kundalini type yoga. But when I got involved with the Self-Realization Fellowship, started doing Kriya Yoga, it was amazing. The first time I started doing these techniques, I could feel my breath change, my consciousness change, and my life change. For the first 2 weeks after getting these techniques, every day something profound would change like that. And I was amazed. I thought, man, it's a relatively simple technique. But between the technique and the connection to this path of masters, I was having some pretty profound experiences and have continued on that path for over 40 years. I meditate more and more. And now that I'm working less, I try to meditate a few hours a day. And I feel the difference. You know, psychology is great and it's very helpful, but it's limited. You can only go so far.
And when you, during your early experience, when you mm-hmm. felt like you were, when you come, as I would put it, unglued, and you felt you were insane or you'd lost your sanity, how long did that phase last and how did you pull up out of it? Did you go to other psychotherapists? I mean, is there a circle of, how did you pull out of that?
Well, I mentioned to you, it only lasted for like a couple minutes because of my training. Remember, okay. I said that I'm watching myself in this experience, realizing that I have this strong observing ego who's able to kind of monitor and be aware and still make choices. You know, when you're psychotic, you don't make choices. You're just kind of, you're like you're in the river and the current's taking you along. Here, I mean, I still had my will. I could choose to go for it or not to go for it. And so because of my background and training, and I'd worked with people who had been hospitalized. I did some inpatient work for a while. I really had some good exposure to what it's like to be in that state. And because of my training and my ability to observe the experience I was in, I realized this was a spiritual, mystical thing. This was not a psychological thing. And it wouldn't have been as helpful to go to a psychologist. Although, to her credit, the woman I was seeing in Kleinian psychology, they're big on fantasy. It's, you know, the imagination and what you come up. It's kind of like dreams in a way that these fantasies have content and they mean something. So I'm telling her all this stuff goes on and she doesn't believe in anything I believe in. She doesn't think it's a spiritual thing or whatever. But she treated it as fantasy material and the way she related to it, it was incredibly helpful. Even she didn't totally discount it. She just had a different take on where it was coming from and what it meant. But our conversation, nevertheless, was extremely helpful for me at that time. And I mentioned that to her, too. I said, you know, this is pretty surprising. So unless somebody can find what I call like a conscious psychologist or a transformational psychologist, or they don't have to be a psychologist. They can have an MFT degree and be a master's level person. But unless they have some direct experience of consciousness along with their psychological training, then if you're looking to go this route, a traditional psychologist won't help you. In fact, there was a time in my life when I was coming out of a relationship and I felt pretty distressed by it. This was after I'd already had my awakening stuff. So I wanted to talk to somebody. So I found a psychologist who was very conveniently located a few blocks from my office so I could just walk over there. And I worked with him for months, just about normal, everyday, worldly stuff. And he was really helpful. And then when it was all done, I thought, well, I'm used to coming. I like this guy and I'm used to paying the money. So why don't I just kind of shift the focus and see what might come up if I go back into kind of the methodology that I'm familiar with when working with consciousness, which is you tolerate silence, you go inside, you open yourself up, you become receptive, you put your attention up with your spiritual eyes. You use your inner life to open and receive whatever spirit has to bring. So I thought, well, let's do it. So I went in and I was quiet, and I felt this energy starting to come in. And people who work with energy know what that feels like. You know, it's like music in a way. It's getting louder, and I could feel something starting to emerge. And as soon as the vibration started to intensify, he starts talking about something. It's pretty worthless to me. And, you know, I asked him to be quiet. I tried to explain to him what I was doing. And then it would start again, and he would start talking again. I spent 3 weeks. I went once a week. So we're talking 3 hours. At those days, it was $100 an hour. I spent $300 trying to train this guy to shut up, to be present, to listen, so we could work together in this way. And he couldn't do it. It was impossible for him to engage that space. So I had to leave because I was tired of trying to train him, and it was costing me too much, and he wasn't that good of a student. So
I think that is actually an amazing context for you, that because of being a therapist, you had that experience of having been with patients who had been in altered states, either, you know, insanity or out of, you know, some phase of out of their mind, whatever we want to call that. You have better words for it. But I mean, that you had that as a reference point. So when you were feeling that brief bout of, wait a minute, I'm coming unglued, you actually had the experience of having been with people who were in that state for different reasons. So that you were able to flash through all of that and thinking, well, that's like, this is not a patient for people that I'm going to say this. That's like Bob. Bob was like this. I remember Bob. You had that as an actual reference point of, oh, wow. But then you had that, you sort of had that chaos theory where you were momentarily unglued and then the stuff fell apart aside and you came back together as this, I can't think of a different word than enlightened in a certain way. You had that aha moment of like, oh, wow. And that's very exciting.
I did. And enlightenment is a process. I mean, I had an experience of it, but it's continued to deepen. But the issue that I think is really important in this discussion and for our listeners is the notion of the self. See, psychology has the self, and it's based on pretty much your thoughts and your feelings, or maybe your body. You know, I have a body, and people identify with the body. And so that's the notion of the self. When we go into a spiritual world, if your identity is stabilized in the soul, and you're aware that you're more than your body and you're more than your mind, that your consciousness is a solid, stable kind of force, then you don't get lost when these things come up because you have your connection to yourself while these things happen. And one of the ways I learned this many, many years ago when I was working in the hospital, inpatient setting, there was a woman there who had a tremendous intuitive capacity. She could tune into you and know everything about you. She told me something about me that I didn't realize until 3 months later. And she was absolutely right, but I wasn't ready to realize it at the time. The reason she was in the hospital is that she would tune into you, have great access to who you are, and then become you. She couldn't get back. As far as she knew, she was you. She was totally lost because herself was not stabilized in, let's call her Jane. You know, it was so open and fluid that she didn't have any core identity. And so she would become Richard for a while and then eventually get back to herself. And it took her a few weeks typically to do that. And so, you know, people with great intuitive capacity, that's one of the channels is just through feeling, intuitive channel, is that you can feel what's going on with somebody else. Now, the idea is you tune into the vibration, you allow the vibration to kind of enter you because everything is encoded in our subtle energy body. You can feel what's going on with the person, know a lot, but you also need to know how to let go of that and not be stuck in that vibration. You have to be able to clean yourself up so you don't take it with you. So you don't take on their issues. She didn't know how to do that. And I think that's what happened that saved me a little bit, because I had a lot of psychotherapy in those days, because part of my training to be in psychotherapy. If you're a psychotherapist and you haven't had personal therapy, I don't know how you can help anybody, because it's like you don't really know what the inner map is like. You can be kind of mental and cognitive and be helpful to some degree, but if you're talking about depth work, I'm not sure people can do that. So I had a lot of years of cleaning up my personality, so I did have some core stability. And when this other world opened up, I realized that there was another aspect of me, which we can call the soul, that was now being revealed.
Mm-hmm. And how is your, as you've been doing this for years now, how is your ideal of wanting to integrate spirituality into the world of psychotherapy met by practitioners? Are they open to this now?
Just for the record, I haven't practiced as a psychologist for quite a while.
Right.
Managed care made me make a decision to stop being a psychologist because of the way the business model had changed. As we were talking earlier, Sherry asked me, you know, why did I write this book, Sacred Healing, Integrating Spirituality with Psychotherapy? I wrote it for my colleagues and for kind of sophisticated people who were looking to find a therapist who was somewhat evolved. But I tried to colleagues change and transform. And that was a number of years ago. There was a limited market. The people who are open to it, like in the transpersonal psychology world, they love this stuff. But your conventional people didn't want to have anything to do with it. Now, my guess is that there are still people in the medical world who have interest in this and use it in their professional world, but it's clearly not mainstream. It's something that generally isn't taught, as far as I know, in traditional medical schools. And just as an example, I mean, anytime I have someone who's a close friend or family who goes into the hospital for surgery, I'm there in the recovery room hours, hopefully not more than two or three, after the surgery. And I start pulling out the anesthesia out of their body, because it takes the body a while to kind of process that and detoxify. And that's part of the recovery process of slowing the body down. I mean, the organs are kind of suppressed. So if you can get that out, people perk up and wake up more quickly, and they recover with less negative side effects. Scripps mm-hmm. did a study on this years ago with heart patients and found the same thing. So people would get out of the hospital fast, and the doctor was going, wow, I can't believe you're making such a great comeback. Well, you would think, you know, I'm there in the hospital, people watching me do this. There are people, like I had a cousin who had a brain tumor. It was not malignant, but it was a brain tumor nevertheless. And she had the surgery. We did this, and it was pretty profound. You could see, you know, if you're clairvoyant, she saw it. I saw this yellow stuff just streaming out of her body. It was the anesthetic stuff. She perked up, and a day later, she left the hospital. This is after brain surgery. And they didn't expect her to get out there for a few days. You would think that they would say, hey, what was that? You know, maybe you could help other people here. No interest, no invitation, nothing. And, you know, with the ability for people to use energy to help the immune system and the body respond, the energetic body, which we can call the astral body, is like a blueprint for the physical body. It changes the energy in the subtle body. It changes what's going on in the physical body. So you can kind of speed up the healing process. And my experience, it works. And it's a great way on top of everything else. It doesn't take the place of good, sound training. I mean, if you're a doctor, you should become trained as a physician. If you're a psychologist or a mental health worker of some sort, it's good to know basic foundational stuff. But this gives you a way to more quickly go into the mind, the emotions, the body, and make changes that don't have to go through time.
I have a question from Sherry's having a bit of mic difficulty, so she's asking me a question for you.
Sure.
Regarding the hospital pulling out the anesthetics and such, do you go into the body and grab the medicine and pull it out through the skin, or how does that, how is that, what is the format, if there's such a thing, of that?
That's a good question. First of all, the language is important because I'm working on an energetic plane. You know, people have had the experience, probably a feeling, so if they go into a room and it's a lot of depressed people in there, the room is heavier. You go into a room, people are lighter. Just watch the World Series, you can feel an upliftment in Chicago, you know, when things happen. And so I'm not even thinking primarily of the body. What I do is I use my hands and I feel around the body, above the body. I don't even touch the body. Around the body, and I feel the vibration that's happening with this person. And then I link up my energy with the energy field that I'm working with of this person. And at that point, personally, I'm not doing anything. If you learn how to get out of the way, then a lot can happen. So it's not I'm making a decision, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. I'm kind of reporting on what I've observed, that what happens when this work goes on, that there, and I'm kind of in a prayer, I ask God to come in and help. Might be Christ, might be Divine Mother, kind of depending upon my mood, you know, or some other masters that I'm connected with. And I say, can you help this person? And then what happens is the energy starts to change and starts to go into different frequencies. And then there's this magnetic sensation. It's like when you put two positive poles of a magnet together, you can feel this sponge-like kind of thing. That sensation starts, and then these things start to come up, and my hands are actually drawn up as the energy is being pulled out of the body. And so this subtle energy is going into the substance that's in the body. It goes into cellular levels, it goes into organs, it goes into tissue, it goes into whatever is going on here. And it changes those vibrations, and it helps the body to release whatever toxic stuff is in there. It's kind of like, you might think of it as evaporation. You know, there's this toxic stuff, and we'll call it a liquid, and the body changes frequency, and it gets evaporated, and it just kind of dissolves and comes up into the subtle ether out of the body.
I've had this experience about 3 years ago. I had a boatload of surgeries. And a dear friend of mine had been working with this gentleman, and I would wake up out of a surgery, even pre-surgery and post-surgery, I would wake up and he would be sitting in the chair. He'd just smile at me because I'd be pretty, I had about 30 hours of surgeries. And I would wake up and he'd just be sitting there and I could feel something. I can't define it, but I would definitely have that experience of, I guess what I would call energy for any better word, occurring. And he would smile at me. And then at some point when he knew I was baked in a good way, he would then, you know, leave. And he might be there for half a day. He might be there for an hour. He would just gauge, he would know the feeling, and then, and he wasn't leaving me to abandon me, he was going to help, he was going to work with other people. But it was an amazing experience to just feel him in the room, and even other people, and he was kind of a slightly scruffy looking character. I don't mean in a bad way, but he just, it was just his persona was sort of a little scruffy. And he would be there. I mean, here we are in a hospital setting, he's not related to me, so there was a lot of explanation by friends around me, knowing that he was coming to help me, and from who he was coming from, that it was really like, no, he really needs to be here. And to see how the other professional, you know, the doctors and the nurses and the staff would just sort of like always give him a wide berth. And I just thought, and not in a, he was not scary, but he was just very, you know, that when you're in that deep state of meditation, there is a sort of an energy to it.
Sure.
And he had that. It was a blessing. It was an amazing thing to be part of.
Mm-hmm.
And it really did make a big difference. I have a question. I have a question from chat about where does subtle energy come from, and is soul to the body as mind is to the brain?
Oh, that's a fascinating question. First of all, energy is everywhere. Consciousness, it never started and it never ends. I mean, God is omnipresent and eternal. We're talking about divine consciousness that is manifesting in our realm. And one of the views of creation is that in the beginning, God pretty much condensed himself from the unmanifested into the manifested by changing vibration, and just became denser and denser until it manifested as a physical body. So this energy is everywhere. You don't have to go kind of looking for it outside. What you need to do is learn how to open up internally, and having a teacher can help a lot with that. But you open up your inner realm so you can experience what's here. Star Wars was great. I mean, he talked about the Force. Same thing. They use this, you know, the Force be with you. It's always there. Just trust the Force and tune into it. And so the other question, I hope that answers that. The other question about, you know, is the soul to the body like the mind is to the brain? I want to redefine mind-brain a little bit, because in traditional world, they think, well, the mind is kind of a function of the brain. And it depends upon the language you use and how you define mind, because people can be dead, have a clinical death experience in the hospital, and yet still have consciousness. They're aware of things. And there are stories, people have been brain dead for as long as 45 minutes. They come back with profound experiences to share from the other side. And there's no brain damage. Typically, they come back in a better way. I mean, they're kind of smarter and more evolved and more open and more loving and more altruistic. So if you're talking about the mind like consciousness, then that's when to look at it. If you're looking at the mind from a more kind of traditional point of view, then when the brain goes, the mind goes. But consciousness is beyond the mind. Meditation practice teaches you how to differentiate between consciousness and mind, because you sit there, this is the simplest of techniques, to just follow the breath and watch thoughts. Mindful meditation helps people make a distinction as they're watching the breath and they're watching whatever their inner experience is and just being aware of it. They notice that thoughts come into their field of awareness, and then the thoughts go away. But they haven't gone away. The thought goes away. They're still watching. So as thoughts come and go, eventually, if you sit long enough and get quiet enough, the thoughts stop intruding, and you're just left in this very loving, peaceful place that's filled with light and a lot of positive experiences. As a side note, I know in the years of teaching that I've done all over the world that fundamental Christians are terrified of meditation, because somehow they've got the misinformation that if they close their eyes, the devil's going to get them, because they're going to have a blank mind. Well, meditation is not designed to put you in a state to have a blank mind. It's designed to put you in a state where you go into a higher state of mind. Now, Western psychology doesn't have even have a language to adequately talk about this. In Sankhya philosophy, again, discussed pretty clearly in my book, Sacred Healing, Sankhya yoga philosophy talks about two kinds of mind states. One is called manas, and that's the mind state that Western psychology looks at all the time. And basically, when your energy is kind of focused around the medulla, which is your primitive brain, then you're connected to your body. It's more body consciousness, and you get the notion of the mind that Western psychology likes to talk about, your consciousness, your subconscious, and your unconscious. Well, the yogis, they started working with subtle energy and meditation and drawing these currents up the spine into the point between the eyebrows called the ajna center or the spiritual eye. Think about it. The medulla is a couple inches below the higher brain functioning up in the frontal lobes. And so as you're drawing the energy up there, you're bringing the energy out of the primitive brain into the higher centers of the brain, and it opens up a different level of perception. They call this buddhi, and is more of the discriminative intellect. So now you're able to see things more clearly and know things in a different kind of way because you've changed consciousness. So it depends upon what kind of mind you're talking about. So the soul is eternal. It comes in, out of the body, you know, birth, death, and in between if you know how to do it. And so the soul is eternal, and it uses the body as a home, as we have a life. And consciousness is connected with the soul. So it's the realization of awareness when you're in a conscious state. If you're totally unconscious, you're not aware of anything. So the goal is to become super conscious, not unconscious. And so the difference between the brain and the mind, let's use consciousness rather than the mind. And consciousness is kind of similar to soul body. If you think about consciousness brain, the brain can be dead, but consciousness is still there.
That's profound.
I found it to be very profound. You know, and what really cracked me up, because, you know, I'm a psychologist by training, right? And I'm learning all this stuff. And then I realized that what Western psychology views as it, you know, this is what they spend all their time at, yogic philosophy sees it as delusion, something to get past and not even put all that much energy into. So I thought that was hilarious when I first realized that.
I have two comments and a question.
Yes.
While my mic is working, one of the things I do for me, just from the inside out, is I do everything that I can do to help or hinder a situation. And if it happens anyway, I accept it. But the key for me is that if I've done all I can, then I'm released from it because I haven't anything invested anymore. And I believe that God doesn't allow things to happen that aren't supposed to anyway. So that's where that's coming from. But the other piece of it is I start my day with allow this day to be for the benefit of all concerned. Boy, and sometimes that gets tough when it's against me or it's hurting me and it's helping 100 other people. So I was just asking these two little tricks for me. Is your book the kind of steps toward taking people into that state where they can find the things that help them bring peace? I saw a lot of description in your book, but I want to know what you want people to get from it. What's in there?
Well, you know, when you write a book, you're trying to inspire people and educate people. On my website, ronmann.com, I have a ton of materials like you're talking about. I have produced, you know, state-of-the-art meditation programs for self-healing, for meditation, for transitioning out of the body at death, for helping sleep. You know, it teaches people the technology of how do you work with consciousness, how do you work with energy, how do you reprogram yourself to go into higher states. I have videos, audios, articles, all kinds of stuff. And so there is a ton of tools, educational tools available to help people learn how to do this stuff. There's a meditation CD that turned into an MP3 file. I call it Inspiration for Meditation. It's a 30-minute meditation with beautiful music in the background. It takes people through the chakra system and just goes up the spine to open up higher states of awareness. These meditations are really quite beautiful and help people realize their true nature and deeper aspects of themselves. So the book kind of sets the stage, and I talk about meditation in there, and I talk about philosophical things. And a lot of times you have to deal with the mind first, get the mind to be open, and then go in to practice these things. That answers the question?
Yes. I have a question again from chat. That was a great answer, and it's really good for people to have access, because we haven't really talked about your site and how much materials there are there, or how many materials there are there. I have a question from chat about, do you feel that, what's the balance between will or acceptance, and is one of them better, in air quotes?
Well, I think they're two different things and yet related, and one isn't better than the other. You need both, you know. The will is based on the flow of energy. Meditation practice teaches you how to focus and concentrate and direct energy. So that strengthens your will. If you lift weights, you can have your hand on a weight, grab it around there, but nothing's going to happen unless you make a decision to pull it up, right? So your will, and you know, if you ever worked with a trainer, they're there, you know, kind of driving you to try harder, to do more, to use your will to get past stuff. You know, it's not uncommon people in crisis situations, all of a sudden they have strength they never had before because of the increased adrenaline, but also their will gets activated because somebody's in danger and they want to do something. So this will is important in being able to enhance your ability to manifest yourself, your energy. If you have a strong will and you have a decision, your intention is to be a loving person, kind of like Sherry was talking about. You start your day with this nice thought. It opens up a flow of energy that just streams out to help people. If you think about people in a positive way, you could call that prayer or not, and you visualize them, you know, receiving this light and this blessing and getting better, you're using your will to direct this flow of energy. Well, surrendering is it's a tough path. It takes a lot of courage, because Sherry even mentioned it. You know, you wake up in the morning, you make this intention, your commitment to help people, and yet the things that are happening may be putting you at risk, in danger, creating pain, whatever. It's your decision to go with the flow. If you feel it's the higher choice, and again, you have to use intuition and wisdom and what's the higher choice or not. But if you surrender, then more will happen. And there's a great image, kind of a story that a monk from the Self-Realization Fellowship used to tell. And it's like a divine sculpture. You've got something in there that's inside the granite. And the sculptor comes in and starts chipping away at the rock and reveals this incredibly beautiful that was inside as a potential inside this sculpture. Well, if the granite had consciousness in this, sculpture comes up and takes a chunk off, and the granite goes, "Hey, what are you doing? That hurts. Give me that back. Stop it. Get away from me." Well, obviously, the inner beauty would never get revealed. And so surrender, like I said, takes a lot of courage, because we're put on earth for a purpose. We all have a purpose, and a major part of that purpose is to realize our divine nature. Most of us are identified with our ego, especially money, sex, and power. You know, how much we have, you know, how attractive we are, how much power we have. It's all about doing. And so we're so attached to being successful in all these ways, but that has nothing to do with the soul. The soul is about being. It's not about doing. And so in order to evolve, there needs to be experiences where you learn that if you lose something at the level of the outer reality, of the doing or your possessions, that you may gain something on the inner because you let go of the identification with that outer ego aspect, and it opens up some inner space to realize that there's somebody in there that's extremely full, full of love, full of wisdom, has access to joy as opposed to happiness. People are always, oh, I want to be happy. I want to be happy. Well, happiness is based on duality. If you get something, you're happy. If you lose something, you're sad. Joy, which is part of your divine nature, isn't based on outer reality. You can be joyful when you're consciously connected to your soul, no matter what your external experience is. You can be in painful experiences, but feel God's presence and feel this divine joy that's reassuring and peaceful in spite of your outer reality.
I'm saying that partially because I've had some of that experience. I was in a healthcare facility for about a year during my surgeries, and it was not a great place. And when people would come visit me, evidently I'd shifted into my higher self, because when people would come visit me in this cacophony, 250 people in a facility, some in lockup, and they would come visit me in the cacophony and the everything of it, many friends had a very hard time visiting me because the space was just not soothing in any way. And they were always so surprised that I was calm and at ease in my healing process while I was in between surgeries. And that evidently, I think that I evidently flipped into a different higher consciousness of acceptance. And I was just there. And that was, I wasn't joy-filled, but I was accepting. I can't say I was joy-filled. I would be lying if I said I was joy-filled. But I was definitely accepting of... I was calmer. And and people, around me that would come visit would always be like, oh my God, you're so... How... What? Even today, 4 years later, people are still... We laugh about that. Like, I couldn't come visit you. And when I did, it was spooky because you were so at ease and the place was so not... I don't know. Yeah, it just happens. I think it's a. I think if we allow ourselves to, we can go to that acceptance place. And acceptance for me does not mean that you're giving up on the septa, like, oh, poor me. It's just you're in some place that's a challenge and you accept it. And then that it makes the transition so much easier or smoother or softer, I think actually would be the word I would use.
Well, it does. And I think acceptance is facilitated if you have faith and an experience of spirit. You know, blind faith is something you believe. Real faith is because you've had the experience. And if you can trust that God's hand is in whatever, and that even though the outer experience may be difficult, if you let go and really kind of allow this thing to unfold, you can feel that divine presence come in, and the first experience of it is peace. And so it will support you and give you a new depth of strength to have the capacity to endure the difficult things that we have to do. You know, an interesting experience I had with my father, who was a physician, and near the end of his life, he had some strokes and he had some dementia. And he had some expressive aphasia. So he really wasn't talking much, and his mind was not like it used to be. So the more he lost his mind, the more his heart opened up. So it's back to our other question too, you know, what's the difference between consciousness and the mind? Yeah. And I found that I had a wonderful time being in his presence. We would just sit for hours. I wouldn't say anything. But he was peaceful. There was a sense of joy about him that I never had to that extent when he was in his normal kind of best self of functioning as a physician. And when he died, that's really probably the best example of difference between, you know, brain, mind, consciousness, soul. When he died, I'm in the room. His body's not functioning, brain dead. The room fills up with a golden light. And there's a presence in the room that is so sublime and so peaceful. You could hear a pin drop. I was almost breathless. I was breathing, but I didn't need to breathe much. I sat with him for 3 hours in this state. And it was the best time I ever spent with my dad. And it was clearly, it was his soul that had just been kind of released from the body, but hadn't fully gone to the other side. And hopefully Yogananda and some of my other friends were helping him there. But that experience of just being with him, I mean, he obviously at this point was in a different state of reality. And he seemed to be accepting it because of the state we were in. And it was very healing for me, very nurturing, to be in that much love and that much light in this nursing. He died in a nursing home.
Wonderful. In our last couple of minutes, I have a question again from chat asking, is sacred healing a different form or a different kind of form from any other kind of healing in your mind?
These are great questions. Who's Chab? He's got these great questions. All right. That's a great question because, you know, when you go to healers or you talk to people, they go, oh, do you do Reiki or do you do this or you do that? And I'm a little jaded by all that because I believe that energy is energy. And these forms that people have taken on, say, well, I'm going to do Reiki and it has its own kind of form to it, or I'm going to do this. You're all working with energy. I was trained in a formless way to learn how to tune into energy and become a vehicle to kind of channel that and consciously work with it. So I never made a business out of training people to be sacred healers, you know, and you know, it's a marketing thing. I mean, everybody has to make a living, God bless them, and if it works for them, that's fine. But to me, it's marketing. If you're, you know, in a state of God realization, these things are available to you and the energy flows.
Succinct and truth. I love that combination. So people get your book. How do people work with you? Do you do one-on-one coaching? How do people start this path?
Yeah, they can. I mean, I can, this day and age, telephone, Skype, you know, if they're in Phoenix, Arizona, personally. I haven't taught much in the last couple of years because, like you, I had some medical issues. I blew out a disc and had some surgery to clean up the disc, and it didn't go as well as the doctors had promised. So it took me a couple of years to really kind of get back into recovery mode, and I stopped playing golf because of it, because it's too much wear and tear on my body. But for normal everyday life, I'm good. So my energy is good, and I'm putting myself out there more to do this. So they could call me. Should I give a number?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, my cell phone, 310-387-5115. That's 310-387-5115. Or they go to my website, ronmann.com. I also have ronmangolf.com because for a number of years I was a sports psychologist, taking all of these methods and helping with peak performance in the golf world. Meditation, concentration, focus, energy, surrender. I mean, all the stuff, all these things apply to anything and everything. Chief executive, athletes, whatever. So if somebody has kids and they want to help their kids perform better, yeah, that's something that I used to do quite a bit. So they can just, or email me, manr@ronmann.com. So that's my last name, M-A-N-N, letter R, at R-O-N-M-A-N-N.com. Either way, and we can work out something to help people.
That's wonderful. They can get your book at Amazon. Rave reviews there. People mm-hmm. loved it. They loved the workshops that they did with you. And it's no wonder. I find your voice so spiritual. It is just incredibly soothing to listen to. I don't think I would care what the words were. It's just the sound of your voice. Really appreciate you being on the show. It's wonderful.
Well, it's been my honor. You know, this has surpassed all my expectations. I must say, this is one of the best interviews that I've done in a long, long time. I mean, I think the content and the depth and the quality of information that we were able to talk about is very profound and helpful to people, and it's because of the two of you. You know, because you live in these states and you understand it, so you allowed this conversation to happen, and thank you for that.
Well, if you
thank
ever
you so
want
much.
To come back, there's an open invitation.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Absolutely. I will be in touch.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that's Ronald Mann. It's a great show. He's really, you know, it's an interesting mix of what he knows, what he's learned, and what he's given up to get into that state of ability to, you know, help others heal. Quite good. Quite enjoyable. So again, this show will be available in about 10 or 15 minutes. It's soundhealthoptions.com. Click on the radio tab and then click on archives of Blog Talk Radio, and it'll be at the top of the player. And you'll be able to go out into the world. You go to iTunes, search for Sherry Edwards. Also true of Pocket Cast, Dog Catcher, any of the aggregators of your choice. And I do, for those that are just hearing this, I really suggest and advocate for people to go to Blog Talk Radio and sign up for free, cost you nothing, and search for Sherry Edwards and sign up to get notifications, which just means the day before the show you get a reminder of the show and who's appearing on the show will come in your email. Blog Talk Radio does not spam you, does not do anything bad. And there's a lot of great audio recording happenings at Blog Talk Radio. So I'm a fan. All right, everybody, have a great rest of the week. We'll see you on Sunday, where we're talking to somebody. The usual. Not sure. All right, everybody, have a great rest of the week. Bye-bye.